Welcome to the Coven House podcast, The Witching Hour, with Robin Bradley.
Hello, everybody. This is Robin from the Coven House, and welcome to The Witching Hour. I am very excited for today. We have a wonderful guest on today. His name's Nick, and he's Celtic Witch. We're going to be talking a little bit about him and his practices, his rituals, his deities, and This is going to be a lot of fun.
Well, thanks for having me on the podcast. It's fun and great to be here.
Glad to have you. So, Nick, tell us a little bit about your background, how you got started.
Oh, I've been practicing my craft for about 3.5 years. I'd say more seriously the past 1.5 years.
So, Nick, you've been practicing a while. What's your background? How'd you get into this? How'd you get started?
It started about 3.5 years ago. I had some interesting, kind of awful life experiences, and I was always just really looking for something, like really searching for a sort of spirituality, and
So kind of like a calling?
Precisely. Because I spent lots of life just kind of, drifting around, not figuring out what I wanted to do, and my craft's really helped me, figure out what I want out of life.
Kind of gives you that guide a little bit, like a lantern?
Precisely, that guiding light, that push.
What was your first experience like?
First experience? Well, as lots of people say too, it came to me in a dream, more or less.
So let's talk a little bit more about your ways of worshiping your deities. For everybody that's out there who's into Celtic witchcraft, what's your deities like? What kind of rituals do you do? What's your spells?
My deities, I worship on Morrigan, the Morrigan, and the Morrigna, the Morrigna, the Morrigans would be the plural. So, Baiv, Maka, Morrigu, also known as Anu and Anan. And I spent lots of time reading through books. More or less, it's been a long process. I kind of process information a bit slowly, so it's been a bit of an arduous task sorting through everything in my brain. But
how did you receive these books or these tarot decks?
Books or tarot decks? Well, that's a funny story because you gave me the tarot deck that I use now.
That was actually an amazing day. That was so much fun. Literally, a guy that looks just like Nick. From the future, like, if there's no Back to the Future, I don't know, but this man walked in, and he was like, these are for you, and it was just books on books that were, like, photocopied from other books that you could tell were taken from a library, and I asked him, he was like, I had the feeling that I needed to drop these off here, and no shit, after Nick left, this man left, I called up Nick, and I was like, your books and your deck has arrived.
Yeah, that was a pretty interesting day. I more or less just woke up to a text like, oh, I have your things here. That left me kind of confused, especially since he said he looked dead on like an older version of me.
Literally, yes. I know what you're going to look like when you're old. It's great.
I don't know. Maybe it wasn't an older version of me. Maybe it was one of the other folk. One of the good people.
Have you ever encountered any kind of negative energies that you had to deal with accordingly?
Absolutely.
What was your ritual like?
My ritual? Well, I go through lots of saining. That's from it's a Scottish folk tradition. It's heavily Christianized. It uses traditionally like fire, smoke, blessing water to... Well, in their tradition, they invoke God, they invoke the Christian deities. But I am an animist, so I ask the spirit, like, say, the great spirit of water for help. Or I'll ask the spirit of the specific plants I'm using for help, like juniper, mugwort, vervain. And I use that for cleansing.
All could be found at the Coven House as well, just saying.
Nice plug.
All right, Nick, let's touch a little bit more on saining here. You were talking about the different kind of herbs that you used.
Different kinds of herbs. mugwort, vervain, and juniper. As it all turns out, they're astringent. They're all amenagogues, which means that they all promote menstruation, so women out there, you don't want to just willy-nilly burn that and inhale all the fumes.
Yikes.
That might not be what you want. But they're what I use. They're what I've used extensively.
Also helps with abundance.
Also, along with asking the spirits of the herbs for help, I'll call upon my deities that I worship. I'll call upon Anmurigen. I'll call upon Baith, Maka, and Anu. And they have helped me extensively.
Can you give me an example of how they helped you?
Clearing out bad energy is one, because energy is very sticky and it clings to everything. Strong emotions can do it. Someone lighting a cigarette even, or smoking a joint. So, just to stop, like, somebody's bad day from following you around, you can sing.
So when you feel like you have some negative energy attached to you, what's the first thing that comes to mind that lets you know that something negative has attached itself to you?
It's hard to define. It's like a strange feeling that something is off, like, out of the normal.
So kind of like shivers up your spine.
Almost like a pressure.
Like pressure how? Like on the shoulders, chest, head?
Across the entire body.
Across the entire body.
My head, my heart, my stomach.
And after you've done cleansing, do you feel like a sudden instant relief?
Absolutely.
Do you find that you regain energy again so you can continue on life?
Exactly. That's what it's for.
Excellent. Oh, that's wonderful.
It's also worth noting, too, I also consider myself a bit of a reconstructionist, not strictly. And by that, that means I look into lots of the old folklore.
Yes, let's talk about that. The Nerchemesis.
Old mythology. Old mythology to figure out what people did and what people still do to keep themselves safe and protected and spiritually hygienic.
Metaphysically, that sounds wonderful. It sounds like a nice hot bath after a long cold day.
Absolutely. But during all my studies, it's also everything, well, nowadays, since probably about the 5th century or so, it's been done by Christians, so it's all done through a Christian lens. It's an Abrahamic worldview, so you have to do lots of more or less reading in between the lines to try to find the old beliefs in them.
At one point, were you ever Christian and or Catholic?
No.
Okay, good.
Which some people might call appropriation, but I don't know, if you're unraveling strands to figure out the basis of something, I think that's important. And I think it's important that people know about that as well.
I want to talk a little bit more about this folklore, because you mentioned fairies earlier today, and I have been nothing but thinking about corgi dogs right now. Let's go.
It's not good to call them fairies, for one.
Fae,
you find it offensive. Apparently that's not very good either, from what I've been told. But traditionally, like in Ireland, forgive my Irish, they'd be the Aishí, the people of the mound. That's Sidhe. Because in the old Irish lore, after people came and took Ireland from the gods, they and the gods both agreed that the people would have the world above, and the gods would have the earth beneath. And the old belief is that they retreated into the mounds, which are all over Ireland. They're in Scotland as well, but those are also referred to as the Sidhe, Sidhe. And that's also where traditionally the other crowd, the other folk, that's where they dwell as well.
So I have a couple clients that come into the shop all the time, and they actually had a question. Is it true that fae, or as we know, fairies, used to actually be like a negative thing that would kidnap children and eat them?
Ooh, that's a very popular thing, which is why you need to be wary of them, which is why people have had so many folk protections over the years. I think it's kind of an ambiguous term, because it encompasses an entire class of otherworldly beings, which we don't entirely know about. But this is why people have had these protections over the years to ensure the health of their livestock, their families, their children, so that perhaps if they offended the wrong being, that their child wouldn't be taken and replaced with one of the children of the fair folk.
Okay, so are fairies like what Disney makes them out to look like? Or can you describe what a fairy would look like? Or fae, sorry, if anyone is offended.
The fair folk, it could encompass a lot of beings. There's people can go off about pixies. There's also the water horses in Scotland, the Akishka, the Kelpies, the Selkies, seal folk. But all the fair folk are said, they're not nature spirits per se, because they all dwell in the other world, the Celtic other world, the Gaelic other world, which is a very ambiguous place in itself.
Can we go in a little bit on the Gaelic side?
Yes, of course. That's what I'm most familiar with. The Gaelic Otherworld, though, it's almost like another dimension. It can be translated to the other life as well, or the other worlds. I view it as an alternate dimension of being, where everything that occurs here in this reality is also mirrored in the other world, which is why we all need to be in good relationship with ourselves and the earth and everything, so that things don't go out of balance, because when things go out of balance, that's when bad things happen.
So do you practice any kind of astral projecting? Now, for people who don't know what astral projecting is, it's when you center yourself, you align your chakras, you open up that third eye, and then you do like a meditative process type deal. You're going to want to, also self-hypnosis helps out big time. We're going to be talking about this later on in the podcast as well. So that is what astral projecting is, just a way to calm your mind. And then there, every single witch has a different ritual when they're doing said things. Usually they take it in a bath bomb, or they'll take it in a bath ritual. A lot of people use candles, crystals. So what do you use, Nick?
I actually don't astral project. I do love my meditation, but I don't astral project because personally I'm a bit afraid of going into places that I don't want to go, or places where I don't belong and have something potentially bad happen to me.
So you reach that point by just self-meditating?
Absolutely.
What would something like that kind of look like, Nick?
The meditation techniques that I use would be like the fourfold breath. Count to four on your inhale through your mouth, count to four on your exhale through your nose, and you're just trying to become consciously aware of every part of your body. So I'd start from the top of my head and work all the way down my body, all the way down my scalp, my ears, my nose, my face. Go all the way down and just center myself to where I feel one with everything.
Is there any kind of poem or words that you say when you're doing that? Kind of like a peace poem?
Ah, that's one of my favorite ones. Let's see here, because this needs a little bit of context. So without going into way too much detail for everybody, the Tuatha De Danann, the Tuatha De, the tribe of the Irish gods, they were enslaved and forced to give tribute to beings known as the Fomori, or the Fomorians who dwell beneath the sea. And to put a very long story short, a very long interesting story that's worth looking into, the gods defeated them and drove them into the sea, where the Morrigan recited two poems to declare at the end of the battle, the first being a prophecy of peace and plenty, which is also a spell of peace binding, the second a prophecy of strife and destruction, which I do not wish to repeat here, but both are seen as they will both come to pass, and they will always come to pass, one way or another. But I use the peace poem in meditation, and it actually has quite a few functions. You can use it to bless a space, you can use it to bind your space in peace, you can bless water with it, you can use it in meditation like we're just talking about. But I'll use the first four lines here, as they do work, and a really long comparative analysis of the poem would take up a lot of time, because it's all very dense, layered language. But I'll repeat it here without putting intention into it, so I'm not binding everybody listening to this in peace. So we'll do four lines. Sheet ko nev, nev ko daun, daun fo niv, nartikach. That would be peace to the heavens, heavens to the earth, earth under heavens, strength in each. It's also worth noting that this is referring to the heavens in an Indo-European religion or Indo-European culture sense of the sky and the heavens as an abode of the ancestors, not the Christian heaven, which I had a bit of trouble dealing with at first. But this is establishing peace from the heavens all the way to the earth, all the way to primal matter, which upholds the heavens in turn.
That was absolutely beautiful.
Thank you.
I love that. So if there's any other Celtic witches out there, if you have any questions looking for a coven or anything, Nick is available. We'll be talking about how to contact us a little bit later on for people who have any kind of questions. How long have you been practicing for, Nick?
About 3.5 years, more seriously in the past year and a half, where I've been reading at a much faster pace than I was before.
And do you feel like you've grown from there?
Absolutely. It's been transformative. I feel like a completely different person.
Good.
I feel more confident the way I look at and deal with the world and the things and problems that happen in my life, and now I can solve them and help other people with their problems.
So when you're doing your spells and stuff, do you primarily use candles? Do you use crystals, herbs? We all know you're using herbs. We all know this. This is happening.
I love herbs the most. I do use candles and worship lots, though. Worship of my deities.
So you're just thanking your deities, pretty much.
Yes.
So when you say worshiping your deities, do you want to, like, kind of break it down a little bit for everybody? Like, how would you give them an offering?
Incense is my favorite one. So is lighting candles. So you could say, I like to light charcoal discs. Place a blend of herbs that I've prepared beforehand that I think would make a good offering, which can also be multifunctional for cleansing as well.
Wonderful.
So I'd like, first, I'd ask the spirit of fire and the spirit within the charcoal, I'd ask them to help me, my devotion.
What about water?
I don't use water as much, because I don't like leaving water laying around, because water is seen as a gateway into the other world as well.
Because you had mentioned before blessing water. So I wanted to see what blessing water in your world looked like.
Oh, blessing. The act of blessing water, in my eyes, I would again ask the spirit of the water, ask my deities that I worship. I'd ask them for help in blessing and consecrating this water. And sometimes I even will recite the peace poem to bless the water. And then I'll take like a stalk of herbs that I've grown. I've grown mugwort, so you could take a stalk of mugwort, ask the spirit of the mugwort for help in what I'm doing, dip it in the water, and then I'll fling it around and bless the space that I'm in.
So in the world of witchcraft, we give each other like little offerings. Like, for example, if I, for example, went to a witch's house and cleansed it, you know, like, we don't usually go in the form of money. It's usually offerings. So whether it be eggshells or, you know, those little things that people have scavenged type deal as like a thank you gift, like they're little tiny gifts or whatever. Anyways, this guy right over here.
Oh, no.
I had a little grow tent in the back and I was growing sage. And as wonderful as the thought was, this guy over here brought me chamomile. Full of ants. Gave my shop herpes.
I didn't know it was
full
of ants.
It was horrible. The orchid man had to show up. Twice!
And you'll never ever let me forget it, and I'll still feel just as bad every time you bring it up as when you told me about it.
What? We could laugh about it now.
No,
when they
bit.
Were making little ant mountains in my hallways.
Oh, that was horrible.
But it was a sweet gesture. It was. Just next time, shake the damn plant.
Yeah, or soak the soil in water for long enough so that ants will leave it. So anybody growing their own plants at home, don't forget about that, because bad shit can happen.
Got to quarantine your area after that one. Whew. It was a good time, though. Made beautiful chamomile.
It was pretty tasty chamomile.
It was. transferring energies then?
Ooh, transferring energies. Typically, you could do that with your dominant hand, because your non-dominant hand is what you use to receive things, receive energy.
So always give high fives with your least dominant hand. And if you win something, because you don't want to pass on that good luck. Like if you get that strike in bowling, obviously you don't want to give the opposing person that's high-fiving you your energy, right?
Yeah, exactly.
What about oracular magic? I'm curious about this one. I really want to know.
Oracular magic's great. It's kind of a rabbit hole. It's all on the breathing control.
So like Alice in Wonderland? Or a different kind of rabbit hole?
Both. Very ambiguous, ill-defined one that you have to define yourself, which you have to be careful with because it could have a great outcome or disastrous consequences for you or whoever you're using it on, if you're using it on someone else. But, like I said, it serves any purpose you need it to. All in the breathing control. In the old myths, it was considered that things that were all spoken in a single breath would come true.
A single breath, eh?
A single breath.
Weird that we blow out our candles with a single breath on our birthday cake rituals.
So that your wish comes true.
Yes. I get most excited about my birthday, not because it's my birthday, but because I get a wish. And that's a guaranteed wish to come true. That's like going and getting a scratch ticket from the corner store and knowing it's a winner even before you scratch it. What else do you do that's magic?
Magic. Well, to touch back on oracular magic, actually.
Yes.
I use peace binding to help bless the space that I'm in.
So what would a peace binding spell look like?
I actually really like using the peace poem that I recited earlier. I recite it in its full, though, instead of the first four lines.
I love that.
Typically, along with druidic breath, liminality while reciting any oracular magic gives your magic, your sorcery, greater power, as liminality, like having one eye closed, standing on one leg, having one arm behind your back, reciting in a liminal place, like the threshold of a doorway, or at a liminal time, which could be the time before sunset, the time before sunrise, anything that you would define as an in-between time.
Have you ever woken up during the witching hour?
Too often. But this liminality means that part of you is effectively in the other world while you're reciting your oracular magic. And it's also important to note here that ethics are very important.
Yes.
Your wording is very important because yes. You can't take things back despite your intentions.
Things done out of anger are things that cannot be undone.
Precisely, because you don't want to unknowingly transgress or cause a greater imbalance in an attempt to, say, restore balance, keep balance, tip things back in your favor. And this is also important because traditionally in all the old Irish myths and folklore, poetic blemishment is used to blemish a king, because a king that's blemished can no longer rule.
Wonderful. I just love that. That's great. That's awesome.
And as we touched on earlier with asking and invoking deities for saining, spoken charms can be used in conjunction with this to make it more effective.
So for anyone that's kind of just getting involved with Celtic magic, Celtic witchery, like what would your advice be to someone who is just kind of starting to dabble into it, or someone who's just even curious about the idea?
Read the old myths.
Old myths? Any kind of books that we should...
There's a number of mythological cycles. There's the Ulster Cycle, which has the great Irish epic, the Tan Bo Cuilnge. I probably mispronounced that, but it's the cattle raid of Cooley, which features Cuchulainn, which features the Morrigan as well. And it's about a war between Connaught and Ulster.
If someone wakes up and decides, hey, I want to be a Celtic witch right now, where would the best way to start looking for those types of books, because obviously you can't go to the library. And I'm pretty sure I can try to track them down at the Coven House, but I'd need to know exactly which ones.
There's a really good website I use that's called Celt, where it's celt.ucc.ie, I believe. And it has transcriptions of all the old mythological cycles, lots of folklore, and multiple translations by multiple people throughout the years for them. And as well, I'm personally a big fan of the modern author Morpheus Ravenna. She's done lots of great work. She did The Book of the Great Queen, which is a fantastic work in the Morrigan. And she has a very useful and helpful book called The Magic of the Otherworld, which actually outlines seining, oracular magic, binding magics, all that sorts of fun stuff. I am highly influenced by her. I will put this out there. I am by no means an original practitioner in my eyes.
What would your altar kind of look like? And for people who don't know what an altar is just a space in your house, or it could even be a garden. If you're a garden witch, we'll be touching on that later. And it's just a place where it's sanctioned, cleansed, where you'd have all your tools pretty much for spell making. What would your altar kind of look like, Nick?
If you're just starting out and it's not anything deity specific, because all deities have their likes and dislikes, just like any person would, I'd start out with just a simple container for incense, something to burn the incense in. Just some candles. 3 is a great number. 9 is an even better number, because traditionally 3 is the fullest extent of anything. 3 is a sacred number.
What's the meaning behind 3? I know what 4 and 6 is in the Asian culture, but I'm not sure about 3.
3 is the absolute fullest extent of anything. It comes up time and time again in the folklore. The symbol that I'm wearing, the triquetra, the threefold knot, which is also ambiguous and ill-defined, I believe it represents 3. There's lots of important things that happen in the old myths. There's the threefold death, where you die, you're struck a killing blow 3 times. That's like the ultimate death that you could experience. 3 is very important. There's triplicate goddesses like the Morrigna. The triquetra is also considered, while it's been Christianized as the Trinity, not to represent the Father, Son, Holy Spirit, but it's much, much older than that. It pops up time and time again in some form all the way through to Bronze Age cultures. It's very interesting. A lot of the information is also, it's been syncretized into Christianity with the Christian worldview. And it was all written and recorded by, like, say, Irish monks, because Ireland was Christianized in the 5th century. So everything is viewed through a Christian lens, but that's not how it originally was.
So you were talking about druids. Druids is also, like, a different category of witchery. How does druids come into play with your Celtic witchness?
Well, the druids feature heavily in all the old texts because they were a separate priest class in the Celtic world. They're divided into 3 categories, so
just like your trifecta
again. Yeah, like the triquetra.
That's it.
There was the bards, the filly, and the druids. The bards, these things are all heavily debated in books, but the bards were more or less like, they were musicians, they were lore keepers, as the druids and the filly were, but it focused more on praise of a patron, myths and stories. There are master bards, and there are master filly, which were also lore keepers, but they're on a different level. It's been highly debated that the filly and the druids were separate, or they were together, or they played a lesser role in druidic ceremonies, and the druids were the actual religious priest class which would perform rituals and ceremonies and the like. But they also served as judges, lawmakers, advisors to kings. They were very extensive, very embedded in the Celtic world. And I say the Celtic world be all the British Isles, all of Gaul. And strangely enough, The Druids never wrote anything down about their practices, probably due to its sacred nature. So most of what we know about the Druids that isn't gleaned from myth is through a Roman lens, which they'd have their all their propaganda because they were trying to conquer where the Druids lived. And they were a high political power. Like I said before, the Druids could blemish a king so that he could no longer rule. So they had a sacred role that spanned all of society.
That is absolutely fascinating. That is so cool. Like, beyond words. It's awesome. So, in witchcraft, we do have seasons as well. And, like I was saying before, we just ran through embolic season here. What did you do, or do you guys practice that in the Celtic wizardry? Witchery.
It's kind of funny you asked that. I read something on Facebook, of all places, the other day. A bunch of Irish people that were complaining that Imbolg had only shown up in... Or Imbolg, depending on where in Ireland you're from, your dialect. These people were debating whether it was even original practice. But it lines up entirely with St. Brigid's Day, who's a very important and interesting character in Irish history. She's a female saint, which is also speculated that she could have been a druidess of the goddess Brigid, who's featured in Irish mythology as well. She's in the town Bocuilni as well. And she's been more or less syncretized into the role that she has now. But people are debating the Imbolg's new age thing. They'll say it's like the woo-woo practitioners trying to discredit it.
You want to talk about Brigid's Cross a little bit? You want to explain to the people how someone would make something like that?
Oh, I've never made one.
Well, you drew a really nice one.
Though. It's a symbol of the Irish Saint Brigid, which is also conspicuously, if you turn it at a 45 degree angle, it is a sun symbol, which would be comparable to the Indo-European swastika, which has a horrible rep now, deservedly, from Nazis appropriating it and using that, perverting it for their own horrible agenda.
So we're talking about the Brigid's Cross and how it conspicuously looks a lot like a Nazi symbol. Do you think that the Nazis kind of practice Celtic witchery? Or what is your opinion on that? I want to hear this.
Well, it's well known that they combed the world as much as they could to try and make up this weird, spooky, Aryan view of everything. And in my view, more or less just mishmashing together a bunch of different cultures' ideologies and perverting them for their own shitty agenda.
That sounds horrendous.
It absolutely was.
So we were just talking about Lorica prayers. You care to delve in on that one and bring some light to what a Lorica prayer is?
It's really interesting because Lorica is from Latin, meaning like breastplate or armor. So traditionally, they're Irish prayers asking for protection. They're petitioning God for protection. But more or less, in essence, you're invoking a deity, in their case, it was historically Christian ones, to lend protection to each part of your body and to you as a whole. I'll give an example here. I'll not put any intention into it. Don't worry, everyone listening at home. So this would be this example. It's Lorica of St. Fursey from around the 7th century. It's, "The arms of God be around my shoulders, the touch of the Holy Spirit be on my head, the sign of the cross be upon my forehead, the sound of the Holy Spirit be in my ears." So therefore, in creating your very own Lorica or shielding prayer, you'd start with an invocation of your deity or deities, ask them for protection, and apply said protection to each part of your body. Now, visualization while doing this is key. You can even touch each part of your body while you're doing it to apply the protection. So I adapted a Lorica prayer from Morpheus Ravanus' Lorica template in The Magic of the Otherworld. Again, that's actually a great book. But I'll read it out here without putting intention into it so no one's freaked out. But here it is. "I invoke Namorigna, be with me today. I invoke Onmorigan, be with me today. I invoke my guardian spirits. Be with me today. May you all be my protective armor against all harm. May your holy power be over each part of me, over my head and my mind, over my sight and each of my senses, over my voice and throat, over my shoulders and arms, over my hands and fingers, over my torso and my spirit, over my heart and my stomach, over my legs and feet, over me and encircling my body and being. May all of me be encircled by your protection, from my waking to in my sleep. Thank you, Namorigna. Thank you, Anmorigan. Thank you, my guardian spirits. Thank you all for your blessings and your protection. And when you want to remove this, you'd recite it more or less in reverse. You'd invoke your deity, your deities first, and then ask them to remove each protection from each part of your body, and then thank them at the end.
That's wonderful. That sounds just absolutely beautiful. Well done, Nick.
Thank you.
It was well done. Well, if anybody has any questions for Nick about any of this Celtic witchery, if you have any curiosity, anything, you could always just call down at the Coven House or swing by, come say hi, and then I will introduce you guys to him, and maybe you guys can form a coven. So later on down the road, essentially at the end of the day, we're not alone. Like, regardless of you're a black witch, a white witch, Wiccan, pagan, it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, you're not alone. And if you're looking for that second person, like I was once upon a time, to come in and help out and just help cast those spells, help spend those seasons together gardening, you know, maybe you can give them some chamomile and give their shop herpes.
I'll do better on giving away plants as gifts this time. And I should also add to what you just said, I was actually kind of reluctant when you asked me to do this at first because I didn't feel qualified, so to speak. But in the end, is anyone really qualified to do anything? And if it helps somebody in any way, well, I'm just glad to help people.
That's what we're here for.
Exactly.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. That was Nick, and thank you so much for coming on and talking about everything. This is Wicked. We'll be definitely getting you back on here soon.
Thanks for having me on, Robin.
Thank you.
Brought to you by The Coven House, 93 Quebec Street, Prince George, British Columbia.